things of air of the spirit.
That's right. And then to manifest what is appropriate. Now, in this great movement of libido, its expressions, the movements of suppressions, the formation of the ego, and then what we call the formation of a superego. According to him, apart from the ego, there is also a formation of a superego, which is as if we are a representative of the external world within ourselves. The do's and don'ts of the external world are transplanted into ourselves, and we ourselves become the external principle within ourselves. What we call normally the conscience is the superego, according to Freud. So human being is basically bound in this gamut of things: the libido, ego, suppressions, superego, the frustrations and the occasional repercussions of the suppressions, and manifestations without suppressions, and man's struggle against suppressions. This is all the human life and human story, according to him. Now the question of change of human nature, therefore, hardly arises. Human being is destined to remain like this. He is like this, and the human beings will continue to be like that. You can, at the most, give advice as to how not to suppress and how to allow the manifestations of the libido, and in many forms in which this libido can express itself. Sometimes the external principle may not allow a certain manifestation in one form, but it may allow it in another form. You just now spoke of poetry and painting and so on. It is basically an expression of the libido in the form in which the external world allows it. It is a form which is very beautiful. It is what is called sublimated. There is a sublimation which takes place. You sublimate the form in which your drives are manifested. And that way you satisfy your expressions, and therefore you are more healthy, because there is no suppression. But those individuals who cannot sublimate and who cannot express themselves in this form, and who don't have the chance of manifesting because of the external world, and they are doomed to suppressions, and therefore they are suffering from various kinds of complexes. This idea of complex is another Freudian concept. If you want to translate exactly in our Indian terminology, which is called granthi. Granthi is a kind of a complex, but not in our consciousness. In the childhood, a certain child went near the staircase and he fell down from the staircase. He was almost killed, but survived. He was too young to remember this event, but the experience was horrible. So this experience being horrible, unpleasant, the child suppresses it and goes into the subconscious. And now, even when he has grown up, whenever he sees a staircase, he withdraws from it. He does not want to climb down. And he feels horrible to look at the staircase. And he always feels he is about to fall. without knowing why he feels. Now sometimes he even tries to overcome this. And in his adventures, he tries to climb up and down heroically. So, an impulse to overcome heroically and actions which proceed from this heroism and the fear which is underlying, the two things meeting together constitute a complex. Some child is always told, you are good for nothing. And the child feels very resentful of this remark, I am good for nothing. Does not want to hear it, does not like it, does not want to remember even. So he suppresses it. And outwardly, he goes on doing so many things which will bring a kind of an appreciation that you are so good. But he overdoes it because he actually tries to overcome an unconscious feeling that he is good for nothing. So there is an unnatural movement in the child to overdo, to do certain things which are heroic for him, which are not natural for him. It creates a kind of a complex. Wherever he goes, he wants to show off that he can do so many things. There is no natural development because there has been so much of snubbing and there is a complex in him. The other way around is also true. If a child is told, you are wonderful, you are very good, and really he is not so good, and he knows that he is not so good, but every time he is put up on the sky. So it creates an opposite kind of suppression. That also is not healthy. So, these examples can be multiplied in many ways. Now, what is peculiar in Freud is that according to him the libido consists only of two basic drives. If you analyze all human actions, ultimately you'll find that they are reducible to two basic things. Eros and Thanatos. The desire to love and desire to kill. These are the two things which are paramount, or you might say they are the exclusive things in all human beings. Every human being is in search of love, in search of killing. This is his discovery, that this is, if you analyze a human being totally, ultimately you find there are only two elements in him. And these are the two basic drives which are constantly trying to manifest to human beings.
Isn't this also an animal drive? These are basic drives of living for itself, not just human beings, but this is about it, through civilization and through, I think, in their nature, parents, adult and child. To some extent, the adult can take over as we grow up.
Quite true. Your statement that when you go down below the human realm and go to the animal world, you find the same instincts over there, which is quite true. In human beings, however, there is a further element that human beings can become conscious of this to some extent.
And because they can change their nature to some extent.
Change, as I said, sublimation of some kind, so as to come into contact with the outer world, but change to some extent, as I said, it does not mean that you can change the basic libido. according to Freud, the basic libido remains the same. The form of expression, the polish of the expression, you can change. The manner of expression can change. The finesse of it can change. But basically what is to be expressed is this. And that is where the problem lies. So the question is man really nothing but a packet of Eros and Thanatos? If man is only this and there is nothing else in man, then naturally all talk of change of human nature is out of the question. It's an irrelevance. You can slightly modify man, you can slightly make him happier than what he is. You can make more poets and more painters in this world, more refined human beings. But that is all. Therefore, Freud said that ultimately mankind is doomed. Whatever you may do with it, whatever civilizations you build up now, ultimately there is a doom awaiting mankind. So this is a pessimistic note that Freud ended with. He didn't see in humanity any possibility of a great new world to come over. Actually, we saw in the Western world what was happening. He said, this is exactly what is happening. Desire to kill, tremendous desire, what is violence all over the world because of this, the basic libido. Now, this was his theory, but his disciples disagreed with him. There is, for example, a famous disciple of his called Jung, J-U-N-G. And he disputed with the analysis of Freud, and he said that in the unconscious, these are not the only elements. There are much greater elements. And in our being, there is not only the ego principle, but there is also a integrating center, which is much wiser, much more intimate, intuitive. And that is why he said that the Eastern psychology is much profounder. And he wanted that Eastern wisdom should be studied by the West to understand man. He also felt that astrology, for example, is a very important science, and mankind can learn a great deal if one were to turn to astrology. He also felt that the mythological stories which are studied by human beings, even though they know their mythologies, but there is an attraction of human beings to learn the mythological stories or to revel in mythological stories, is because of the unconscious, which consists not only of Eros and Thanatos, but certain archetypal images. According to Jung, all human beings have an unconscious inbuilt figures which drive and shape their personalities. In many mythological stories you have a young prince in search of a young princess, attacked by old women or witches, and then advised ultimately by a wise old man by whose help the secret of the young princess
her abode is known, the young prince is able to rescue her, and then they live forever in happiness. Now this is a kind of story that you find recurring in mythological stories. And people, although they may know the story in advance or they may not know, they always like the stories. And in their own imagination, these things play their role. Everybody is in the sense of an old wise man. And everybody is attacked by the old witches. And everybody is a youthful human being. And everybody wants to have a company of another youthful person. It's a constant search of youth for the youth, and the attack of the old, and the rescue comes from the wisdom. Now this kind of inbuilt psychological makeup of the human being is a deeper truth of the unconscious than what Freud explained. There's another disciple of Freud called Adler, A-D-L-E-R, who maintained that it's not the desire to love and desire to feel that is so important in man. What is important is that every human being is in search of the way by which he can dominate. Desire to dominate is the most fundamental drive. The way by which he can be superior to the others, the way by which he can have his own style of life, something distinctive, something which will make him out of the way and make him mark on the world. This is what his man is seeking fundamentally. And now, of course, there are many theories as to what exactly is man, and there is a lot of search. In fact, one of the famous sentences of the modern psychology is that modern man is sick and is in search of his soul. That is one of the famous statement of the modern psychologist today, that modern man is sick and is in search of his soul.